still flashing?
No, it's green.
So, normally, you would have one of these to take home. This is not a normal year starting. But we do have a copy on the usher's table for January, February, and March of all our Sunday lectures, talks, discussions. So do pick them up. And also, it'll talk about our Wednesday night class and all our information that we would normally have on here. So, as we stated, on Sundays, we usually have some sort of talk or discussion or a panel. We start promptly at 11. We're over promptly at 12 noon, but the doors open at 10:30. On Wednesdays, we have our study class, which we are continuing to study in the Ocean of Theosophy. And prior to that class, which starts at 7:45 to 9 p.m., our library is open Wednesdays from 5:30 up to 7:30. It is a reference library, but all are welcomed. And we do have a special meeting coming up far, far away, Wednesday, March 19th. It is called A Great Theosophist. It's commemorating the passing of William Q. Judge. All are welcome to attend these meetings. So between the library on Wednesdays and our classes for Sundays and Wednesday, that's primarily how most of the work is done here in Philadelphia. Now, concerning our declaration, we'll just do a brief reading of it. This is the declaration that sort of gives an individual an understanding of what we really do at any lodge, whether it's situated here in Philadelphia or anywhere, situated throughout the world. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. Now it holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. We think those few paragraphs give us a whole center of what the basic philosophy is about and what it teaches. So today, very timely, as it were, we will look into this idea of a new year, a new cycle. And after we have the talk, there will be a time period for questions, comments, and discussion.
The student who was to present the talk is ill, but due to the magic of the internet, he sent us a material for his talk. H.B. Blavatsky wrote, "The dial of time marks off another of the world's hours. And as the old year passes into eternity, like a raindrop falling into the ocean, its vacant place on the calendar is occupied by a successor. In the life of nature and of man, certain days do have a special significance. In nature, the vernal and autumnal equinoxes, the summer and winter solstices. As the Earth rotates on its axis, while at the same time orbiting with other planets and satellites around the sun in our immense galaxy, thousands and thousands of cycles within cycles are observed and experienced. There are conjunctions of cycles, the closing of one cycle when its influences have completed their decline, and the opening of another with the rising of its influences. Similarly, there are important days in national and racial cycles, and likewise in the lives of individual human beings. The Earth's journey round the sun brings us back once more to the winter solstice, the birth of the sun, the new year according to nature's clock. Each turn of this annual cycle, which is not a circle but rather like a spiral, should bring us to a higher level. It should be a different man or woman in each case from the one who joined last year in the exchange of greetings appropriate to the day. After all, a year is certainly an appreciable part of the time available for our life's journey. In a single life, man is under the influence of numerous cycles, daily, weekly, monthly, seasonal, annual, and proceeding further, larger ones. Man has his own individual cycles pertaining to his bodily transformation, to his psychic nature, etc. Likewise, there are cycles which affect the life of groups of men and women, family, community, nation, race, and humanity as a whole. Each person, therefore, is influenced by his own particular cycles, as well as by those pertaining to the complex nature without us. He is affected by the changing seasons of the year. While he has his own seasons, the spring of youth, the summer of manhood, the autumn of adult years, and the winter of old age. Moreover, man has his own psychological seasons. Every year, he passes through the repetitive changes in his moral mental nature, which correspond to the seasons of Mother Nature. Further still, just as a single day has its changing phases from dawn to twilight, from twilight to dawn, so also with man. One fundamental difference is this: the cycles of nature are a rhythmical procession, but man's free-willed actions make his own cycles erratic, in the sense that they often do not coincide with those of nature. Human pain and suffering may be said to be the result of personal cycles not synchronizing with those of and in nature. When we are asked to help nature and work on with her, it is implied that our human plans should go by nature's dependable clock. This holiday time, this Christmas and New Year's season, may have a strong inner meaning for those who have the eyes to see. The 12 months round corresponds to a whole cycle in our existence. A page is being turned in the book of life, and some people get tempted to make the time-honored Pythagorean examination. What good have I done? What mistakes have I made? Will I renew and keep my vows to act in the best way I can in the next year? Indeed, the end of any cycle and the beginning of a new one is always a good occasion to evaluate our progress in learning and to make, and of course, keep newly created resolutions. HPB wrote, "And let no one imagine that it is a mere fancy, the attaching of importance to the birth of the year." She also added, "The earth passes through its definite phases, and man with it. And as a day can be colored, so can a year. The astral life of the earth is young and strong between Christmas and Easter. Those who form their wishes now will have added strength to fulfill them consistently." Our perception of time expands at every end of a cycle. It seems we get face to face with other similar moments, past and future. While we turn over a leaf in the book of life, we get a sense of what were the previous pages, and we sit down and have a dialogue with the seeds of the future. This time of year leads us into a different dimension in time. In some cases, a repetition of the same old celebrations around us causes a strange sense of déjà vu, which expands our perception. It brings us recollection of the past, and perhaps to feelings about times yet to be. It is true that any attachment to past things can be dangerous, and H.P. Bay made a warning while writing about an ending year. Let it go with its joys and triumphs, its badness and bitterness, if but leave behind for our instructions the memory of our experience and the lesson of our mistakes. Wise is he who lets the dead past bury its dead and turns with courage to meet the fresher duties of the new year. The topic, once again, is new year, new cycle.
This leaves us a lot to think about when we think about it. There's something that most feel at this time of year. It's a kindness that comes through. It's a warmth that can be exuded that just comes naturally at this time of year. And for us to have that understanding that with nature, we look around and we see everything looks bare, cold, dry, but yet inwardly, in the ground, there is movement. There is progress that's slowly working its way on. And it's something that many can feel. We are part of nature. We have part of nature within us. So we can expand on that feeling if we wish, but it comes with that idea of quietness and peace that we have to have within. We have to let it come in. Otherwise, we're all caught up with the whole rushing and bustling of the time. So we think we might have some good ideas that can come through in our questions and our comments. Yes.
As suggested in the talk, there's a change in the atmosphere of the earth, as well as a change in our inner nature. What is the source of that changing atmosphere within our nature? Is it from something outside ourselves and the celebration and the rituals and the beliefs, or is it something that has a deeper source within our nature?
A deeper source within our nature. We're assuming that most people are familiar with that idea of bearers of light, the light within. If we are in fact truly a spiritual being, if we are in fact that we are an aspect of that deific principle that generates throughout the whole universe, then we are, in a way, that light, that connection. We too have a visible personality that is seen, but we also have an invisible part of our nature within us, that heart nature, that light nature. So that expression that is going on within nature, that invisible, that is also within us. But we have to sort of break the shell to get within, to see, to know that this is in fact a universe that we all, everything within this whole universal connection, is all one and the same. We're just different aspects on our outer side, on our personality that we look and see. And yet, do we really know what another is really thinking and feeling within? That is the real nature within. So there is a definite interconnection. Yes.
Well, if we are beings of light, what blocks that light from shining?
What blocks that light from shining from within us? We have too many clothes on. There's too many layers that come with our personality, our likes, our dislikes, our wants, our things we don't want. And it was stated, as a reincarnating individual, universal being, when we take on these layers of clothes, we forget that we came in and took on these layers of clothes, and we think we are these layers of clothes. So we look in the mirror and we see what we see. So this whole idea of there is a side of us that is everlasting, there is a side of us that is ever becoming, ever growing, ever experiencing, and then there is these clothes that in some future time we're going to change and get new clothes and new aspects of ourselves. So the clothes are going to wear out, but that ray, that heart, that light that we speak of, that goes on to new clothes, new situations, new experiences. Yes.
Well, then, wouldn't you say that the largest item of clothing are the ideas that we hold? If our ideas are narrow, then of course our thinking and behavior will be narrow. So it's the limits we put on ourselves as spiritual beings.
And these limits, when we think about it, that we put on ourselves are not basically really ours. These are things we've read, we've been told, we have seen, but yet we just think this is how I know and how I feel, and yet it's not really within. And that inner part of our nature that continues and goes on, there is an observer within us. That's what we really are, an observer of watching all these passing times and situations and experiences that we have to go through. There must be a reason for this. And this whole idea at this time of year, that feeling of resolve, of wanting to make a change, of wanting to know. That part of that wanting to know, we already have that information within us. It's getting to the point to be able to touch that inner part of our nature. So this whole idea of this time of year, of taking advantage of not of our, just our own wants and needs and forces, but the whole atmosphere around us is there to help us push our way through if we're willing to make the serious choice to resolve to change and gain some knowledge. Yes.
And if we are successful, let's say we choose this year to really follow through on something, a promise we're making to ourselves, if we are successful with that through this year, does that make us better able to repeat that in coming years?
That's a very good point. What about a habit? What about something that you started to do, and then after a while, the habit sort of takes over, and you don't worry about it, it's just a habit. And yet, there comes a point where you decide, I don't want this habit anymore. It's not good for me. It's not good for everybody around me. How easily does it, and how long does it take for us to change a habit? How much work has to go in to keep reminding ourselves, you're doing it again, you're doing it. It doesn't happen overnight. So patience comes within this. Patience that nothing can ruffle, but the idea is be willing to get up and keep trying. It can be done, yes.
There's a law in nature of action and reaction.
Correct.
Such that the more force we put into something, sometimes the more resistance and pushback we get. And I think we see that in our nature. The more we try to push ourselves to achieve something better, sometimes the more resistance we get from our lower nature. So is there a way we can make progress steadily without having to face this resistance so terribly? I mean, can we get through it with less problems?
Yes and no. For some, because of their character, and that's a very key point. Look at our character. What makes me up? What have I learned? So when we look at it this way, for some, they understand that it's going to take, it's a slow, steady drive. It's a constant reminder to stay on the, quote, path, shall we say. For others, it's not being able to silence all the noise within us that comes from without. Whereas some can easily touch that silence within them through meditation, for instance, steps of concentration. But anything that's worth getting and gaining cannot be just snapped into overnight. It's something one has to work on, something that one has to really say to themselves, I'm going to really try to do this. I have the capability, and keep reminding ourselves, this one life of experiences is already being recorded within us. So there'll be other lives and other recordings that we'll be listening to. Yes.
It's hard for me to get why Theosophy is so focused on progress. And like they always talk about, even talking about like the nature of cycles, that you move to a higher plane. I mean, it seems to me that that's actually pulling, like in my case, it pulls me away from the present. Focusing so much on the future. And what's wrong with what's happening right now? I mean, the idea of the observer is what's most beautiful to me. My job is to watch and not judge what's happening. And even the idea of saying, well, I want to move towards perfection is a judgment of what's happening now. And I can't get over that with this whole idea that Theosophy seems to be so bent on saying that I can turn myself into a perfected being. I don't believe that's the case. I believe we're here to observe and to watch and to somehow bring that information, that those observations back to the source.
I understand what you're saying. I just want to correct the one thing. Nowhere in the philosophy does it give you the how-tos to become a perfectible being. The fact of the matter is that ancient teachings have come from, quote, perfectible beings. Beings that were at one point in evolution as we are now, human beings. And it was because of a vow, a resolution, a change of mind, that they wanted to be a help to all humanity, not just to ourselves as we see ourselves. To do this, one has to be able to judge only themselves on how they act and react. The idea that perfectibility is possible is because of where these teachings came from. And the idea, those individuals, those great sages and adepts, do not, shall we say, put themselves forward. They are there to be a help to anybody who wants it. But the fact of the matter is, we're here to learn. Life is nothing but experiences and lessons to learn. If we can look up into the sky and see the systematic movement of the planets, of how comets shoot off, how they have their own motions, their own giving and taking. We see a harmony that is universal. We're an aspect of that harmony. We need to learn how to express it. So the idea is there is a better way of living than what we see in this one lifetime. And the idea of becoming an observer and being aware that we're observing things is a very important inner part of our growth. So Theosophy is not saying, here, these are the lessons in how to be a perfected being. They're not saying that. They're saying there should be harmony and balance, not just in the universe, but through all mankind. And until we get away from this selfishness, this personal wants and needs, this one life shot idea, we're not going to put any of this energy forth to become part of that altruistic, shall we say, universal world that we live in. Yes, way in the back.
The one who is truly observing is learning and growing, expanding and expressing. I mean, every moment of our lives, it is the mind that is at work.
True.
And it is the mind that grows and expands its possibilities. We're always seeking for meaning and understanding, even if we don't understand that's what we're doing. So the individual who is truly observing is not looking to be perfect, but is looking to understand. And that is the very perfection that we're after, to comprehend and be able to use that discrimination as we should as spiritual beings.
Right, yes.
Well, referring back to the talk that was given earlier, it would seem that the statement, get over yourself, refers directly to that talk. And to get over yourself, you have to think as above, so below. As below, so above. It's an opportunity. If we recall those particular statements made this morning, this is the time of the year where we can get over ourselves or out of ourselves and see the meaning of terms such as cycle, new cycle, and also the opportunity to rise above what we consider the real.
And it just seems like when you hear it for the first time, you think, wow, there's this extra energy and force throughout the whole atmosphere around me. Why not tap into it? Why not give us and use that time, this time, to give us that little extra push that for some might need. Others might take to it very easily. Others might find it very difficult. But as we said, it has to be a steady course that goes on and on, way in the back.
The original speaker mentioned about doing the work here and not worrying so much about the future. That's exactly right.
What we're doing.
This is the only place we can accomplish the work, and the future will take care of itself according to how we perform that work, which is our duty, our karmic duty that comes to us. The reason we hear, perhaps, in theosophy so often that we are perfectible is so people will understand they all have the power to expand and express and all the things that were mentioned in the talk. Because if we don't, if we haven't heard that idea, if we just think we can't move any further than this and the belief stops and my hands go up and somebody else takes over my fate, then you're giving it all away. Theosophy is reminding us it's in your hands. Get to work on it here, and that future will play out itself beautifully, especially if you have all that in your heart while you're working here.
That is a very true statement of that. For those of have been older students, can see the change within their life year after year about certain things that we used to think were so fabulous, that's not magic. That's cause and effect. That's why it's that way, because someone put a lot of cause in to making that balance, to making that harmony. So it does give us a pause to know that. And this is the only state, this waking state, where we can interact with the matter that we use, the clothes that we wear, shall we say, all the matter around us. To be honest, spirit and matter are really opposite ends of one pole. But each needs, spirit needs some sort of matter, the costumes, to work through to express it. Matter gets from spirit the energy and the force to exist. So at the same time, everything that we're thinking and touching and doing, we are affecting it, either for good or for bad. And we also just remembered about our responsibility to all of nature. How we think and how we feel during, for instance, a normal course of eating a meal. We are taking lives in, they are being colored, and then those lives and intelligence, units of intelligence we could call them, and they're all different degrees, are going back into nature. So we're affecting, whether we know it or not, by the way we think and act, all of nature too. Yes, in the back.
To go along with that last comment, we agree that we have to be aware of what we're doing at every point in time, that the thinker has to observe and learn. And the only way the thinker's going to be able to do that is to be in matter. And at this point in time, we're here karmically.
Right.
So we have to look at the present. And in regards to the, it's not really a focus on perfectibility, but it's just like a natural course of events.
Mm.
And the thing is, with that progress that we're looking to make, the whole focus of the philosophy is universal brotherhood. So by our progress, we can assist all of nature to, you know, to follow through and, you know, and to progress, you know, from their level upwards as well. So it is a, it's a dual thought. You know, we have to be aware now of what we're doing so that we can correct those errors so that we can progress with the focus on universal brotherhood.
Very much so, yes.
It says in the Gita that we are all compelled to act. And the only thing, not in the Gita, but the only thing that we can count on is change. That is the only thing we can count on. So as an observer, there has to be a point at which I see everything as it is. And we have to make a decision. Are we going to control our life, be more of a force for something, and not against something? So that all of this, all of the culmination of the year and years and years, all is in this moment. And that's where it exists. And if we live in the moment, and try to do our best, that's all we can do, I would think.
And wouldn't you think also that is a good attitude to have about life in general? Live in the moment. Do the best that we can. And as we're living in the moment, we can learn how to get stronger, how to be unwavering in our way of thinking. And there's a feeling that most have, like even little children, they come into this life, there are certain things that they know. And the biggest thing is something that as adults we question a lot. They know what's just, what's fair, what's not fair. Did anybody teach them this? No. It's an instinct of the character to become. It's in its nature. It came with it. It knows balance and harmony. It can see when it isn't there. It doesn't, it is not able to express this, but it knows that's not right. He took all those cookies. He should have waited till we all had a cookie. This is, you know, we don't even think about it, but it's like this is a very important thing. How is it, do we question it, that children just know? And they don't really need in so many ways and certain things to be told no or yes. They already really know. But it's interesting. Where does that come from? Yes.
Because that innocence speaks we, our, us.
You got it. We, our, thus. Yes, it is very true. They really feel like part of a unity because they haven't been brainwashed yet by what will come way in the back. Yes.
Well, I've been continuing to read about scientific research on meditation and spiritual practices. And what one group found interesting at Penn, the Center for Spirituality and Mind, is that when you're practicing meditation and you experience oneness, there's a lot of activation in the parts of your brain responsible for metacognition or observation, such as your prefrontal lobes, your anterior cingulate, I mean,
whatever they're called.
Yeah. But then there's a certain type of religious practice in which you glorify God as other, as outside you, and it seems to activate part of your brain responsible for ego in your parietal lobes, for objectivity, for dualistic thinking. But when people experience Zen meditation or oneness forms of meditation, that part completely quiets. And so it's pretty interesting that scientists can now correlate brain activity with spiritual practices, and the sense of observation is actually putting us towards the experience of oneness versus other practices where you glorify God as a authoritarian anthropomorphic being. You have a very different brain structure that goes with that.
That is very interesting, because it's like the authority really lies within ourself. We can't blame our heredity, our neighborhood, other people for things that happen. It, the responsibility is a big word. And one thing about these ancient philosophies, they did express a lot of, you are responsible for everything that comes to you. Everything that comes to you is magnetically drawn to you because of your magnetic ties with it. And there's no outsider that's going to save you, quote. You are in the process of gaining knowledge. And that spiritual feeling that you get from meditation, some can take to it, as it says, like a duck to water. Others really have to work on how to silence. There's so much going on from the outside that we've let penetrate, to understand what it means to quiet yourself, just to silence yourself and listen to the silence, is overwhelming. But once you start understanding that I'm more than what I see in a mirror, then you start stretching your mind further and further and deeper, and you get a feeling that usually those who have done sessions of meditation, it's that feeling of euphoric. It's like you feel it all over. Sometimes when we wake up in the morning, before we start getting it, to it, we wake up and there's a feeling about us that our whole body sort of tingles. And then it says the course of the day, as we start putting on our costumes, our clothing, it fades away. But we do remember that feeling. What was it? Where did it come from? And we do know that everyone goes through dreams at night. And we do know that we go from falling asleep, but nobody knows when they fell asleep. Nobody knows that. They know they went to bed. I don't, you know, they might have woken up. They've been through many dreams. And yet, sometimes it states that that spiritual part of our nature is like what is the nighttime for us is the daytime for our true spiritual nature, because it goes into different degrees and goes to its own level of existence without any of the hindrances of the lower fabric, shall we say. And sometimes that communication that can be done on that level is all souls with all souls, that sometimes an essence of maybe what was experienced has come through past the dream states, because the same way we go out, it's the same way we come in. We come back in, we come through those dream states, and then we start that process of awakening. So there is sometimes that feeling, and we don't know what it is, but then as we say, people say, well, then it fades away as the day goes on, but it was a wonderful feeling. That is the essence that they're telling us that we can feel all the time.
The last few minutes of our discussion here directly answered a question from the beginning about since we are beings of light, how do we let that light shine through? And we think from the discussion now about the higher self and meditating and proper sleep etiquette, we can use all of that along with this time of year to put together almost like a plan to enable ourselves to be more aware in the coming year of the ideas that the thinker needs in order to express itself and express that light.
And we have to understand, it's not a direct process. We might slip and fall a lot, but the fact of the matter is, if we're willing to get up and try again, each time it's like building blocks. It'll be a help to us. Yes.
All of this depends on one's motive. And if your motive is of selfish, that is the result you will see. If it is of universal brotherhood, even though it's not happening, but your ideal is there, your mind is there, and you're putting a positive influence in your life. Motive is all of that. To know oneself, but when you know yourself, you know everyone.
Mm.
So we would think that our motive is what we need to change, or we need to come in touch with, so that what we do, we're doing the best that we can and giving it up to the universe.
And it's for all those who will make New Year's resolutions, maybe it is a time to question our motives. What do we really want? And what do we really think about? It might broaden our scope a lot, just having that questioning of, what do we really want? Why do I want to do a certain thing a certain way? Yes.
Of course, many people, when they want to improve themselves, they'll pray, and many draw up from that. But the term was used several times to make a vow or resolve. Is there a difference between a vow and a prayer?
Is there a difference between a vow and a prayer? We would think so. A prayer, for most understanding, is we're either praying for somebody to give us or help us to do something. That's a prayer to an outside. If we do what we would call, the philosophy speaks of will prayer, that's calling on that inner part of our nature. This is where we really should look, because we're responsible. It's also anything that we're wanting or needing, the response comes back to us. There is nobody outside that can do it for us. We have to it. We have to take the food in, and we have to digest it ourselves and gain what vitamins and nutrition we can from it ourselves. No one outside can take that meal for us and make us any better.
And isn't the best example of a will prayer the Lord's Prayer? When it's really a demand, we're making demands in a sense. Give us this day our daily bread, and lead us not into temptation. That would be, we think that would be an example of a will prayer.
I really don't know on that. I come from a different background, so I'm not even familiar with that prayer. Way in the back, this.
Well, it would depend. If one were wise enough to retranslate some of that, because in most cases people take it as a supplication. This outside power should not do these things, or should do these things. Whereas a will prayer is, I take command myself.
Yeah.
But following through on that, one of the things Theosophy stresses is don't make negative resolutions.
Right.
Because if you say, I am not going to smoke, then every time you think of it, you think of smoking. Whereas you should be resolving, I will only breathe fresh air, therefore you can't have a cigarette. So it's a way of realizing that I feed my own mind, and if I make a negative resolution,
right,
I always have the negative in front of me.
So that's, again, that energy and force. Do you want a negative energy and force? You can build a powerhouse there. But if you want a positive force, that's something that's going to... A positive force gives us, we think of right away, motivation. It's constantly moving. Negative, there's a lot of stops and jerks and back and forth. But that positive is, once I get rolling, I can keep on rolling. You know, I might slip a little, but I can keep on rolling. So that positive is something that... really the only thing we should be able to do in that category, because we have any negativity that we see, if any, would be of our own, not of another. Yes.
From my experience, like we were talking about living in the moment and doing our best. From my own experience, I can only do one or the other. If I'm living in the moment, then there's no capacity to have a will to try to change something. So it's like, once I decide that I'm trying to control the outcome of something, then by definition it pulls me away from living in the moment. And living in the moment is the only space where I myself have been able to feel anything close to universal brotherhood. So it's like, by the effort of, you know, trying to control the outcome, I'm losing the universal brotherhood and creating resistance, like we were talking. Effort creates resistance and takes me away from harmony.
And God forbid we send any of that effort out. We're not quite sure in that dimension, if you're getting the whole picture, as we're saying, live in the moment. Is that in connection with this?
Yes, it would seem, if that were true, what he said, that an athlete is an idiot to try to improve their balance or their ability to do anything. It's being in the moment is knowing what I'm doing and why.
Right.
It doesn't mean I stop trying to make any progress.
And it should be a natural thing within us, because it's all around us. We see it in the vegetable kingdom. We see it in the animal kingdom. We even see it in the mineral kingdom. There's that constant progress of movement. It's not a stagnant thing. Yes.
Also, following on that previous contribution, if a person is living in the moment with full awareness of what they're doing,
right,
and in the process of that, they become... become aware of somebody about to cross the street and be hit by a car? Does it detract from their universal brotherhood to come out of that self-awareness and try to assist that person based on their understanding of oneness? We don't think so. Mm-mm. So we carry with us that ever-present feeling of unity into all our actions, past, present, and future. We retain that while we are acting.
That should set something, a star to think about. Yes.
And also, part of the comment was about controlling the outcomes. Well, just that's what the Bhagavad Gita, the whole thing is not controlling the outcome, not looking for what the outcome is going to be, but doing the action with the right motive and doing it because it has to be done, not for what you're going to get from the outcome.
Good point. And you had a point?
Yeah, I mean, this is a major paradox that people have been debating for centuries, how to have action within action and action in action. How do you live in the moment and yet serve a higher purpose? And, I mean, I'm going to talk about neurology in a bit, but what we found is that, or the scientists have found, is that the part of you that's responsible for who you are, your consciousness, your experience of oneness, is your prefrontal cortex. And the part of you that's responsible for craving, for outcomes, for rewards, for seeking behaviors, is a different part of your brain structure. The part of you that has fear, that has conflict, that feels the need to fight or flight, is a different part of your brain. And so if you are in oneness, you are acting consciously, mindfully, you're acting with full awareness of everything that's happening around you. But when you act out of a sense of reward or outcome, you're actually using a different part of your brain that's striving for social status or recognition or money. And so those two can work in harmony if your prefrontal cortex is driving. But if the basal ganglia, the part that's seeking rewards, is driving, then your motives are, I wouldn't say corrupt, but they're definitely entangled, if that makes sense.
True. And another important point, we are the thinker. We are mind beings. We use the physical brain. And we have the other understanding is, in each new life, you get a new brain. There are certain things that are brought, like filings on a magnet, that'll color it. But the fact of the matter is, we can't expect in this lifetime to go thinking through this brain is going to be able to express all of the experiences we have been in over 15,000 years. So the fact of the matter, the thinker that uses it, did I give the wrong amount again? It's 18 million. I don't know why I keep doing that. I have to work on that. 18 million years of being reincarnating, coming into new forms, male, female, brights, not so bright, whatever. The fact of the matter is, each character in each lifetime, that's what we can look at. That can let us know what we've learned and what we haven't learned, is how our character is. So this is an important time of year. And another hint that's given out, don't try to make too many changes in your resolutions. Take a few, but let them be a few good and important ones to think about. Class is expected. Happy New Year. And let the joy ring out. This.